not necessarily those of our advertisers or staff.
We're WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, AM 1450, and worldwide at WGNSradio.com.
Live from the WGNS Radio Studio in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, this is the Financial Doctor Show. For real people with real money questions who want real, objective solutions. If you want to make better money moves and you're tired of one-size-fits-all advice, then you're in the right place. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. If you want to be a part of today's show, I would say we would call in, but we have a little phone issues here down at the studio. But if we get it back up and running, the number will be to call in 893-1450, and we'll be the first to let you know if the phone lines do come back online. But again, that number, 893-1450, and we'll let you know if the phones do get connected. So we apologize for any inconvenience that may cause you guys out there in the listening world. If you would like to email us, and we will not receive these till after the show as well, because the internet is down along with the phone lines, but our email address, financialdoctorsshow@gmail.com. Again, financialdoctorsshow@gmail.com, and we will respond to those as prompt as we can when we do get back up and running today. We are on Facebook as well. You can find us by searching Financial Doctors Radio Show, or just go to my page, facebook.com/JasonWQualls. If you miss any part of today's broadcast, you can catch it online at WGNSradio.com. Just click the link, podcast. If we get the phone lines up and running, I'll be joined later on by some local experts in mortgage lending and also insurance planning. But we'll stay in tune with what the situation here is with the internet and the phone, and hopefully we'll be having those guests on as part of the show. If not, we'll make it up at a later date and get those guys in here to give you some sound financial advice on mortgage lending practices and also as well as insurance planning. The quote of the day I have for you today is by Winston Churchill. We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. Food for thought there. Very powerful words from Mr. Churchill. We're going to cover several topics today, but first I have to say one thing that kind of goes off with the last show related to sports. Go Blue Raiders. I hope they stick it to the Volunteers today. I'm an MTSU graduate, and both of my guests that would have been on by phone lines today were MTSU graduates, so we're in great support of our Blue Raiders in Knoxville, Tennessee today, and actually one of the guests would have been calling in from down in Knoxville, Tennessee to give us a live update from what is his experience there in the city of Knoxville. But hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, we'll get the phone lines back up, but if not, we will carry on with business as usual. Let me start by giving a little background about myself and the program here. I'm a certified financial planner, and I've been a business owner in this community for over a decade. I have 7 years of experience in financial planning, and I've been blessed with many opportunities to work with normal everyday folks and also some of the high net worth folks here in Middle Tennessee as well. But no more wasting time about me. To read more of my background and my experience and my philosophies, please visit my website, fortitudewealthmanagement.com. That's FORTITUDE, wealthmanagement.com. My complete list of experience and trials and tribulations is listed there for your reading pleasure. But let's get on to some more important topics today. And the first topic I want to discuss with you is what makes someone a true financial planner. What is true financial planning advice? Now, in the marketplace, we hear these terms every day. Someone will say, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a financial planner, and toss around that lingo quite a bit. And when most people, in my experience has been, when most people hear those terms, they think of one thing. And the first place their mind goes is someone that gives investment advice. But in reality, financial planning is just a lot more than that. There's a lot more to it. And I want to spend some time educating the listeners of WGNS today and the listeners of the Financial Doctors Radio Show about my views, my opinions on the subject, And maybe to convince you guys to think a little bit harder when those terms are used in your dealings with the with financial professionals out there. But a real financial planner, I would say, in how I operate my practice, is more of a financial life coach than just a pure investment guy. They take an approach much like your physician would. They would look at everything with your financial well-being, just like your medical doctor would look at everything with your health well-being. And I think that's the number one distinguishing point in someone that's starting the process with you, is really looking at it from that aspect. You know, do they approach it from a client focus, or are they approaching it with a product focus? Something to think about. Aside from that, a main difference in views and approaches would be, is someone addressing, someone you're working with, do they really address what your goals and your belief system is in regarding personal finance? Because every one of us is different. And we could take an approach here on the Financial Doctor Show to market to the masses and make blanket statements. But as I said in the opening of the show, we don't believe in one-size-fits-all advice here. We want to take an individualistic outlook on the subject. And I think that's key when you're working with someone out in the marketplace and also developing your own philosophy of what your personal finance views are, is, you know, is someone focusing on what my true financial goals are? And where I think that the advisors that do a great job, what makes them different, and very few actually operate this way, is they try to get to the bottom of what is the why behind what you're trying to accomplish. Because when it's all said and done, the why behind what you're doing is more important than the what. Because when times get tough, like we've seen recently in the last few years in the investment world, the why is what's going to hold you to and hold you accountable to making sure you follow through on what you once thought that you were trying to achieve. So I think someone that focuses on the why is key. And that's a big part of the financial planning process. So in continuing on with my rant on this subject of what makes a real financial planner, I've already mentioned client focused, not product focused. And you know, that's also some slang out there that gets kind of tossed around, but it comes down to just a couple of different areas when we're talking about that. And the first one being, if we really want to know or determine if someone is client focused, what does that mean? Well, I think the number one rule in trying to spot someone that may not have your best interest at heart is someone that provides you with what's known as full disclosure. And what do I mean by that? Well, in the financial services world, there's a lot of insurance agents, there's a lot of annuity salesmen, a lot of mutual fund brokers that will have financial advisor on their business card. But what does that mean? You know, that sells a, you know, people perceive the financial advisors to be someone that's going to work with them through their financial planning goals and dreams, but that doesn't necessarily always is the case. So what does full disclosure do for you? If you have an advisor that sits in front of you and he explains to you, here's what I recommend you do, Mr. and Mrs. Client, but then doesn't tell you what his compensation structure is, what he's going to be paid on that product he's recommending you do, how often he's paid, what's the true internal cost of it, how can you really be sure you are getting the most appropriate advice for your situation when you don't know what types of conflicts of interest he has? And that is the main part of the full disclosure. And let's talk about conflicts of interest. If they are representing a company, whether it be a brokerage firm or an insurance company or a bank, it's good for you to know, do they have to meet sales minimums every month or every quarter? You know, what's their expectations for the company they're representing? Because then you'll be able to judge whether or not, do they have to meet a quota? Is that why they're recommending this product? Because the truth may be that they very well may recommend another product that outside of the sales quote, outside of that area or outside of that particular situation, that but because of the quota, that's the recommendation they're coming to with you today. And full disclosure minimizes that conflict of interest. When you know how someone is paid, and you know how the internal structures of the company they're representing works, then you can make a better educated decision on between, do you have a real financial advisor, or do you have someone that's really masquerading as a financial advisor? And that's what I call a true financial planner, if they're able to provide you with that full disclosure. And there's typically a couple of different ways that advisors operate. And we've kind of become very apathetic to advisors in today's economic climate because of the last few years. Everybody has seemed to have seen their account size shrink, and there's story after story in the news about people being taken advantage of, and now we have the protest on Wall Street, and as of the protest that we had here on the square yesterday, and we'll cover that later in the show. But why is it so important to know how your advisor is paid? And I'll tell you, the three ways your advisor is going to be compensated typically. This is going to cover most everyone. The first part is, first way advisors operate is commission only. That means they sell you something, they get paid a commission. Now, that could range from insurance products to investment products, but typically you buy something, they get paid. And that would be known as commission only. And then there's what's known as commission and fees, or fee-based. And this is what you've seen the trend of most advisors moving to in recent years due in large part to regulatory standards. The government has cracked down on some of the sales practices that have been going on in the marketplace. And so they've moved away from the sole commission-only environment to a fee and commission. And how that typically works, that they can charge you a fee up front, they can charge you a fee on your asset account size or your investment account size, but they also can sell you products where they're paid a commission. It's a little bit better than the other one because they do have some flexibility there, but it's important for you to understand the differences. And the last way that advisors are working is typically known as fee-only. And a fee-only person or advisor or planner is someone that does not accept commissions, that does not sell products. They only charge for their advice, and that's usually by the hour or by a flat rate. And in my opinion, that removes a large part of the conflict of interest that we have discussed up to this point. Now, let me also throw out a asterisk there. Not all fee-only guys are ethical, and not all commission guys are crooks. But just like most people think of when they think of a salesperson, they think of someone that thinks that puts their interest first and the customer or client second. And typically, in the marketplace of personal finance, there are more cases of misrepresentations and fraud to clients by people that have sold products or are in the business of selling products than those who are simply paid a fee for advice. But all that encompasses one thing, is increase your knowledge on this subject before turning your money over to just anyone. If they aren't providing you full disclosure, ask for it. Become knowledgeable about what drives them. You know, become knowledgeable about what may be motivating their recommendations. And if they've laid it all on the table for you, then you can decide for yourself what's right or wrong. Because again, there is no one-size-fits-all model, we believe, here on the Financial Doctors Radio Show. And if you can educate yourself and know what is what, do what's right for you. Find out which model works best for you and where your philosophies lie, and do what's right for your situation. The next point I want to talk about is, let me give you a scenario here. If you're sitting in the marketplace and you have a cold and you want to go see a doctor or a physician, do you go see one that hasn't been to medical school, or do you go see one that has? And I wish our phones were open. We may take some callers on this aspect, but our phones aren't available at this time. But of course not. You wouldn't go see a medical doctor or a physician that did not go to medical school and didn't have his MD. The same rule applies with your personal finances. Don't go see someone that doesn't have their credentials. And the credentials, which in my opinion and the opinion of many in the marketplace, the certified financial planner designation is the standard. It's the most recognizable. It's one of the most strenuous to obtain. And it kind of relates back to that point. That should be a starting point between you and your advisor. What credentials do you have? Well, no CFP? Well, maybe I should move on. Maybe not, but that's a great starting point, just like you would treat your physician. Have you been to medical school? No. That's a way to start your evaluation of how much do they know. But certainly not the only indicator. So that's my two biggest points there that I've made thus far. If you have full disclosure in this area of your personal finances, then that's key. That's number one. But then you got to look at, how are they trained? How did they become so knowledgeable about what they're claiming they're knowledgeable about? And that doesn't mean that every CFP is smart. There's not every doctor out there. Every MD is not a good doctor. But it's a starting point for your evaluation, and that's what makes it so crucial to your situation. Now, this is your family's money here, so we want to make sure we're protecting that. The last point that I'll go over that really will tie into the Occupy Murfreesboro or Occupy Wall Street movement that we've been seeing on the headlines lately is the fiduciary versus a suitability standard. And this one is kind of left out in the cold a lot of the times, doesn't get a lot of discussion out in the marketplace. So let me lay out what the details of what that means. Because most advisors, the people on the inside, they know what it means, and they know if they follow, which one they follow and which one is really more valuable to the customer or the client. But suitability basically means is whatever your advisor is recommending that you do, it just has to meet your objectives, meet your income levels, be appropriate for your income, and be appropriate for your age. They don't have to provide full disclosure. That's what the suitability standard of care means. Now, that sounds like pretty good. You want recommendations made to you that are suitable to your income, your age, and your situation. So that sounds good. But in my opinion, there's something better out there. And that's something better that is not being advertised by the people that don't have to follow it is what's known as the fiduciary standard of care. And the fiduciary standard of care is simply this. The advisor must do what's in the best interest of the client, not what's in the best interest of himself or any company he represents. In other words, his butt or tail is on the line with every recommendation he is making. And it would be silly if you had the option between the two to not choose the fiduciary duty of care. Because it puts things in perspective for both of you. It starts a level of trust that the suitability standard of care cannot do. So let's recap on this topic. That disclosure, and credentials are extremely important. But also how they actually operate their business from the standard of care on the advice they're providing you is also important. And some recent news on the subject of fiduciary. The Certified Financial Planners Board was actually down in Washington, D.C., or over in Washington, D.C., I should say, pushing for more legislation on the suitability standard. In the press, the Dodd-Frank legislation and financial after the financial debacle has been debated on the headlines recently as well. And what they're pushing for in this legislation is that there be more to protect customers from those that follow the suitability standard. And this is a point that kind of hit me today as I was thinking about what to discuss here on the show. Is advisors, if you are not operating at full disclosure at this point, it's coming. there's enough push from what has happened since 2008 and what's going on with the protest, that there is a demand that advisors be forced or be reprimanded if they aren't following what's in the best interest of their clients. So it is definitely coming. But I've written a book about this subject, and you're free. If you email the show at financialdoctorsshow@gmail.com, again, financialdoctorsshow@gmail.com, I'll send you a free copy of the book, and the book is entitled Fire Your Financial Advisor and Hire a Financial Planner. And it goes into more greater detail of what we've discussed here, so you can, and I tried to be informative, so you can be educated and make the decision that's appropriate for you. I give you, of course, my opinions and my beliefs, but also give you the facts and help you evaluate your current situation. So you can also get it on the website, financial or fortitudewealthmanagement.com, and it's available there for the free book as well. But this will segue into what happened yesterday here in Murfreesboro. Now, we had people come down and occupy Murfreesboro, and I think my producer today was one that recorded the Occupy Wall Street or Occupy Murfreesboro news segment that was broadcast on WGNS Radio yesterday, and it got me thinking. You know, one of the main signs that I saw on an internet website from one of the protesters here on the courthouse square was that it said, "We don't want a bailout; we just want their hands out." So let me talk to you about how this relates to the previous topic of full disclosure and fiduciary. Well, what a lot of people are upset about is the Wall Streeters that had a large part of causing the 2008 debacle. Now, the argument is they got away scot-free, and then they got money from the government to bail them out. I'm not going to debate that issue right or wrong today, but what I'm saying is they operated on some pretty shady sales practices of subprime mortgages and other financial products that kind of started this wave. And you know, people think about that, the repercussions of that on a larger level, but this kind of stuff happens every day here in our own community. You have people advising clients and pushing bad products that may not collapse the economy, but they get away with it every day. And it's the same principle that a lot of people that are protesting are arguing about. So what we need to do as community members is really push for our trusted advisors to follow the fiduciary standard. And anybody worth their weight that's in the financial services industry will be willing to put that fiduciary standard or duty of care in writing for you, so it's clear on what side of the fence that they're on. So this Occupy Murfreesboro, Occupy Wall Street, you know, they're mad at the people that caused this. They want some justice, and I agree with that. We need some justice there. But, you know, there may be some things we can do on the local level, in our own local and state and city, especially the state area, that really forces some more fiduciary duty of care in our own personal financial situation. Because that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see advisors actually doing what's best for the client. I don't want to read another story about someone getting taken advantage of, young or old, because it reflects poorly on me, and it reflects poorly on those on either side of the business, whether they sell product or don't. They advise people, they are financial planners or they're not. But anybody kind of associated with the financial planning industry, when these cases come about, we all look bad. So we all should be against it. And so I take a stand on that, but I think that really plays into the Occupy Murfreesboro thing that's been happening. One thing we were going to have on the show today, a guest, which was going to give us some money-saving tips, a little bit of an oversight by many of us. I know that it's not always top of my mind, so when we hinted on what he was going to come on the show today and talk about, I was like, man, that's powerful. But Grant Lichtenwalter, and he is the owner of Middle Tennessee Insurance Group here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And what he was going to discuss with you today is one that's very relevant. Interest rates are low, and people have realized if you have a higher interest rate, that you know it's a great way to save money by refinancing. And that's just kind of black and white, common sense. I got a high rate, go to a lower rate to save money. But one of the things he pointed out to me that he's seeing with all these refinances going on lately is that people don't take a close look at their homeowners insurance and what they're actually paying. And premiums are important. You know, the more money you save, you stop wasting on unneeded or overpriced insurance premiums, the more money you can devote to retirement, emergencies, college, whatever your financial goals are. So I think that's pretty powerful. But the other thing that really struck me that people don't really insist on looking at the time that many overlook is, what are their coverage limits in this area? You know, they just bought this new house or they just refinanced their house. That's a great time to say, hey, what's my insurance coverage? What if my house burns completely to the ground? What if somebody gets hurt on my property? You know, what are my legal risks? And in financial planning, that's important. We want to address any risk that could prevent you from accomplishing your hopes and dreams. So that's powerful. So Grant would have been joining us today, but the phone lines are down still at this point, so Grant won't be able to join us. So I would encourage you to give Grant a call over at Middle Tennessee Insurance Group at 898-0053. Again, 898-0053. And refinance or no refinance, buying a new home or not buying a new home, take a look at, one, your coverage limits. Are you adequately protected? Because that could really devastate your financial plan, let's be honest. And if your house burns to the ground and it doesn't completely cover, to especially with winter coming up and the risk of Christmas trees and albeit of there seems to be more fires, house fires in the wintertime than it would be in the summertime. If your house burns to the ground and you're stuck with X number of thousands of dollars, that's got to come from somewhere, and it's going to eat into whatever other plans you had for that money, which could have been easily prevented by working with someone over at Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. And also, what Grant has seen in recent years is that premiums are very competitive, and he's been able to save his customers a lot of money by not only looking at their coverage limits, but also just by bringing down their cost. And that's a big one I'm for. I don't believe in, you know, wasting money on insurance. Nobody likes insurance because you don't need it till you need it. You know, everybody basically understands it's a great thing to have, but until you actually have to use or have to get a claim paid, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So we want to make sure we're saving you as the most money we possibly can. So Grant Lichtenwalter at Middle Tennessee Insurance Group, 898-0053. And we'll get him on possibly next week and to maybe be here in the studio or call in as a phone-in guest. But today the phones are down, so hopefully Grant is doing well. He's in Knoxville there to cheer on the Blue Raiders, so we wish Grant well. And that kind of moves us into, I'm just going to slightly touch on these issues. You know, I was going to have one of the leading mortgage professionals in our local community, Mr. Sean Kaplan of Kaplan Mortgage Partners. I believe he's not here to speak for himself, so Sean, if I misspeak, I apologize. But I believe you're a licensed mortgage banker in all 50 states, which I found that to be powerful. I have not seen a lot of that. But I was going to touch on how real estate is a great hedge for inflation, and then let Sean kind of help out with how he is helping his clients in that arena from a lending perspective. And but Sean is not here as well, so I'll cover that topic there. And then when Sean is here next week, hopefully we can dive into a little bit more in depth. But real estate, you know, we've all seen the depreciation of it here recently. And it's, you know, some of the areas of Tennessee have been hit pretty hard, especially Laverne and Memphis. But everybody's been affected by depreciating home values. But don't let that sway you. And this kind of makes the point. Real estate is very, very inflation sensitive. It's a very inflationary sensitive asset. And advisors out there, I haven't seen one that basically will scare you and say, well, look, inflation is your purchasing power of your money. Every year things cost less or cost more. They cost more. The things cost more every year. So that's important if you're planning on saving for retirement, or if you're retired, we need to make sure we protect your purchasing power. And I buy into that. I think inflation is important. It is a factor that we need to predict, or at least estimate what we think it's going to be in financial planning. But we also need to make sure we have we own the correct assets that hedge us for inflationary periods. Now, right now, there's a lot of discussion with the Federal Reserve of trying to keep us out of a deflationary period. And deflation is just the opposite. It's where the price of goods and incomes drop. And they're worried about drastic deflationary periods. So they're doing all they can to preserve that. And we won't get into a big Federal Reserve talk here today. But there's two asset classes that usually really fit into this. You know, cash is a great protector. Cash and other liquid assets is a great protector during deflationary periods. And the reason for that is if you hold cash and the prices of things drop, that cash just got more valuable, regardless of what interest rate you're earning on it. So that asset class, liquid asset classes, can be a great protector during inflationary periods. But touching on what Sean and I would have discussed, again, Sean Kaplan with Kaplan Mortgage Partners, he is located over on River Rock Boulevard, and you can reach Sean for any lending or mortgage questions. He can be reached at 426-3182. Again, Sean Kaplan, Kaplan Mortgage Partners, 426-3182, to dive into some of the other issues in the lending markets. And but real estate is very inflation sensitive. Inflation, you know, when prices start to increase, which eventually they will, and if we go through no one can really predict where we're going to go through a deflationary period or be certain for that matter which one we're going to go into, but eventually inflation will come back. It's a historical number. We do have to have data on that. And real estate, in my opinion, is one of the asset classes that protects us from that, since it is so inflation sensitive. So next week we'll dive into that a little more in depth with Sean. But what that means by owning real estate and also using leverage in your real estate is that when prices do increase and your other asset classes may be lagging behind in purchasing power, real estate, by and large part, offsets a lot of that. One, it's a large asset. You know, it doesn't have to go up as much to offset some of your cost. So it does help you with your overall financial plan and the purchasing power. So we'll touch on that next week with Sean, Sean Kaplan of Kaplan Mortgage Partners. And one of the things that I'm very impressed with regards to Kaplan Mortgage Partners is he's a two-time Ruthie's Award winner. So that's very impressive to me. It means he's doing a great job for his customers and his clients, and not only being very competitive in rates, because, you know, by and large part, that, you know, everybody has low rates these days, but that means he's providing exceptional service, and I think that is key to what Sean is doing. So Sean will be with us next week. All right, moving on. I want to switch gears a little bit here and go something in a totally, totally different direction. One of the big topics that I've seen that most people, that really gets under people's skin, especially with parents, is if you say, hey, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a financial planner, the first thing they want to discuss, if they have children, is college. They put that ahead many times of their own retirement planning, and sometimes, you know, if that's your most important goal, great. But we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the importance of a couple things, and I'm not going to give you your general information. I'm going to try to keep this unique and relevant to you and give you some information you normally don't get anywhere else. But tuition here at MTSU, according to the Board of Regents website, went up 9.3% for 2011-2012. 9.3% was the tuition hike, if their information is correct. And what does that mean for your investments? Well, that basically means if you're saving, you're chunking away, doing good, and you're saving money for your kids' college, and you made all this predictor of taxes and everything else and inflation, and that means your investments have to keep up with the inflation rate or you're going to fall short, is the black and white of it. And we're not going to spend any time today. We'll cover this another day of talking about, you know, what investments would be a great way to, you know, what actual investment classes would be a great way to offset or actually achieve competing with that high inflation rate. But today, let's talk about the factors that we do know that affect most college plans, the ones that your advisors just won't tell you. Now, they all speak about, yeah, tuition's going up every year. We need to save. It's going to cost you a ton of money 10, 15, 18 years down the road. Put it in this college plan and we'll be fine because my investments, they do well. Well, we all know that investments are volatile, especially in the last couple of years. So let's talk about what we can control. And the things that we have some control over is how our educational savings accounts are taxed, or whether they're taxed or not, and also the fees and commissions that are associated with them. I'll give you an example. You know, if tuition is, if you want to send your child to MTSU and tuition's rising at 8-9% a year, and your investments, you know, if the index or the market index is doing 8-9% a year on average, you know, that's what they did. That didn't mean that's what you get, because there's fees and commissions in there, you know. So learning about what is the internal expense structure of the investments you own for college, and learning what the commissions associated with them are, because if you earn 10% on your investments in the year that tuition went up 9%, but they take away 3% for fees and commissions, you only get 7% is your net return, and that's terrible. You know, you're never going to reach your educational funding goals with inflation as high as it's been in the last few years. So I want to educate you to dig deeper into that issue and really look at what you own. Ask the questions. What is my net return on my money here? What are my annual expenses? What are my commissions? And that goes back to what we talked about earlier, full disclosure. It wouldn't be a question you had to ask if there were already a disclosure there. So I think that kind of tells the tale. I believe that most people that have any educational investment account or educational planning account has overlooked that factor, that you need to do a lot better or than inflation one, but what's going to give you the best chance to get there, or the easiest chance, is if you minimize your fees and your taxes. I mean, you minimize your fees and your commissions. So take a look at your overall internal expenses of the investments you own for college. Find out, is it competitive? Because just touching on what we just talked about. Now, we look at mortgage rates, and we want the best rate for a house, and we'll fight tooth and nail and shop around the block for a half a point or a quarter a point. But you start talking half a point, quarter a point on mutual funds, and people are like, no big deal. I'll pay it. But it has a dramatic impact on whether or not you reach your goal with inflation as high as it is now. So keep that in mind. Fees and commissions matter, especially on something that may not be your overall largest part of your investment portfolio, like your retirement account. College is important. It's important to a lot of people and a lot of parents out there. And us being a college town, I thought it was very appropriate we discussed that today. So let's hit on the high points of what are the ways that people save for college. And this will really cover the tax aspect of it. You know, we're left with we can use educational accounts is the main way people save for college. And that's where they get confused. They go, I don't know. There's so many options out there. I don't know what's best for me. So I'll give you the general rundown here. And hopefully I won't be too convoluted and you'll be able to grasp it. And if you have any questions, please, you can reach me at 878-2134. Email the show, financialdoctorshow@gmail.com. And, of course, my website, fortitudewealthmanagement.com. So I can take questions and comments there as well. And find us on Facebook. Like I said, search for Financial Doctors Radio Show. So if it's clear as mud to you today, please, since we cannot access the phone lines today, again, the phone lines are down to here at the WGNS studio, just send us an email and we'll get to your question. But everybody's heard of the educational savings account, and this is the one that's touted a lot by a big radio show host that says this is the end-all be-all. Everybody needs an educational savings account, or what's known as the educational IRA. And then the other one is the 529 plan. Those are the two most recognized college funding accounts. Well, let's hit on some of the benefits of each. Well, one thing I don't like about the educational IRA is you can only put $2,000 in per child. For some, that may meet their objectives, but for many, it will not. So that's the one part I don't like about the educational savings account or the educational IRA is it does have that limitation. I don't like limitations. I want flexibility in my financial planning. If I want to save more, I can. If I want to save less, I can. But I don't like being capped out. So I feel that's a big negative. The other one is on the educational IRA or educational savings account is it has an income cap to it. If you're married, you make over 190 married filing jointly, you start getting phased out of the educational IRA. Now, that won't apply to a lot of people out there, but it will apply to some, and it's a factor. So it's something to think about. And if you're single or a single parent, you start getting phased out at income limits of $95,000. So that's an important thing to look at. But the other part is, what is the benefit? Everything has an upside and everything has a downside. I don't care what it is. And I just want to lay the information out there and to have a discussion with you. And let's make a decision based on your situation, what's right for you. But a key point or a key positive of the educational IRA is that the money doesn't have to be used just for college. It can be used for primary and secondary school. So if you're in Murfreesboro and you're thinking about sending your child to Providence, Middle Tennessee Christian, and I believe I have to do some checking on this, it does just apply to private primary and secondary schools. So I'll get to the bottom of that and see if it does apply to any school. But if that's your goal, Providence is in your foresight with your children, educational IRA is a great way to grow money for that cost. And the growth inside the account grows tax-free, and it comes out for the school tuition tax-free. So that's the major selling point you got to look at. So if you're thinking about college, but before college, you got some private school tuition coming in at the secondary or primary level, and you're putting money away for it anyway, let's grow that money tax-free. Let's grow that money. Let's spend that money without tax. And the educational IRA is great for that, as long as you fall into the income limits and you don't put in more than $2,000 a year per child. On the 529 plan, which we mentioned earlier, which is usually the other alternative in college savings, is what I like about the 529 plan is, like I told you, I like flexibility. I mean, there's no income cap. You can be a one percenter and put in money to a 529. That's what I like about it. That I can make $10,000 a year, I can make $1 million a year and still do it. I can also put in a lot more per beneficiary. If you're a husband and wife, you can put in $26,000 a year into a 529. In one given year for a beneficiary. But if you want to fast forward that and you're married, you can do up to $130,000 in 1 year period, because you get a 5 year carry forward of your gift tax exemption. So the gift tax exemption now is $13,000 per gift, per person, per gift. So if you have a child, husband and wife, mother gives $13,000, father gives $13,000, that's $26,000. Multiply that by 5 years or five, and that will give you the $130,000 you can put in one given year. And of course, you wouldn't be able to make contributions for the next 5 years, but it's a great way to, if you're behind on education at this point, they got started late, maybe when your kids were born, you didn't make as much money, and now you're doing a little bit better, then that's a great way to kind of get it in there. With the educational IRA, $2,000 a year, if you're behind, is not probably going to get you there. But you know, on the flip side, we made some pros about the educational IRA. The 529 plan is just for college. It is not for primary and secondary schools. So it's a little known to, you know, that everybody thinks they're both for college, but the educational IRA has an advantage to the 529 there. So I think that's important. One of the other issues that this was a big topic, and I think it's more relevant today. What a lot of advisors are recommending today is using a Roth IRA, a Roth individual retirement account, to fund college. And people are saying, well, why would I want to put college money in my retirement plan? Well, it's because as the income limits on the IRA has increased, like now if you're under 50, you can do $5,000. If you're married, of course, you need $5,000 for the wife, $5,000 for the husband, assuming you have earned income. So you can get away $10,000 to $12,000 in the current IRA limits. So that makes it a little bit more competitive than the educational IRA. And remember, if everybody out there, the Roth IRA goes in after tax. So it's after tax take-home money, goes into the plan, just like the educational IRA, just like the 529 plan. They're not tax deductible, but they all grow. The growth inside the plan is tax-free. So you're thinking, well, I thought I had to be 60 or 59 and a half to get to my IRA money. How can that be relevant to college? For one, any money you put into a Roth IRA, it's already been taxed. That is what's known as your basis. You can get to your basis penalty-free, tax-free. It's already been taxed. And that is accessible in the Roth. And some people aren't aware of that. They think it goes into the Roth. I got to wait till I'm 60. That's not the case, since the money is already been taxed. It's the growth on that money that must stay in there until you're 59 and a half. So here's the nugget or the tidbit. That growth is also accessible if it's used for college. So if you're putting away, you know, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 in your Roth, and you're saying, well, I really need to save for retirement, but in college is also important to me, but what if my kid doesn't go to school, and what if he gets a scholarship? Retirement's more important than those things. In those cases, that kind of covers all those bases, is that it's a useful tool. Now, having said that, I'll give you my opinion on it. I like stuff to be categorized. It's hard for people and hard for myself to say, well, I got money in my Roth that I may want to use for college, but it also could be my retirement. And I feel like people are better savers when they can compartmentalize things to say, this is my college fund, this is my retirement fund, this is my emergency fund. And I feel like they're better at delegating where their money goes. But it's better to have the information. Make the decision that's right for you. So I would rather you be educated on all the ways that you can save. And we don't, of course, have time today to cover every single college funding opportunity out there. These are just some of the main points of each. But I would rather you have the knowledge. And then once we've discussed what's important to you and what your goals are, then we can make a decision on what's best for you. Again, it's not cookie cutter. That's the difference here on this show. And it's what you'll find ongoing on the Financial Doctors Radio Show. We're going to have experts in here every week. Myself, certified financial planner, other professionals in the financial industry that are very knowledgeable, that are specialists in their area, that can lay it on the line for you so you can educate yourself. And then when you're working with your financial advisor or your financial planner, I'd rather you be working with a financial planner than an advisor. But when you're working with them, you can have a conversation about, hey, I don't think this is a great thing, but this may not be best for me because I learned about this. Let's talk about these things because, like I said, there's upsides and there's downsides to everything. Another way to say it, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And that's true in personal finance. I think that's highly, you have to realize that there is no one size fits all. There may be something that's appropriate for a lot of people out there, but that doesn't mean it's appropriate for everyone. And that's the point we're going to try to tackle here every week on the Financial Doctors Radio Show. We more than likely will air every Saturday afternoon at 1:30 and go to 2:30. And at times, we'll re-air the show on Sunday at 4 p.m., but sometimes we'll broadcast live on Sunday, depending on how the MTSU sports schedule goes. So I just wanted to reiterate, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but determine what is the most important to you. And what's important to you may not be important to your neighbor or the guy beside you in the car on the street. And then take a look at all your options, and then put something in force that accomplishes both, that meets your goals and also is the best for you, because there's so many moving parts to everything. There's so many moving parts to insurance, like we had Grant from Middle Tennessee Insurance Group that I mentioned earlier, talking about people overlook that area of homeowners insurance. There's so many moving parts to every decision you make from your personal financial plan that we don't want anything to fall through the cracks. So education is key, okay? So next week, more than likely, Again, Sean Kaplan with Kaplan Mortgage Partners will be joining. We're going to dive into a lot of things that are on the people's minds about mortgage planning, and also using leverage and inflation, and just really tap into Sean's mind. Sean is highly knowledgeable in this subject. He would be someone that I would say is a specialist in the area, and that's why we will have him on the Financial Doctors Radio Show. And then Grant will be back with us as well next week, which will be the specialist from an insurance planning standpoint. He's with Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. So let me recap. So we've talked about a lot today. So let's hit some highlights before we close out the show today. First, when you're dealing with a financial advisor, so-called, ask some tough questions. How are you paid? Tell me every nook and cranny of how you're compensated. What standard of care do you follow? Fiduciary or suitability? And then look at credentials. Were they just an insurance agent that has done this for 20 years? Did they go get an investment license 10 years ago and they've just changed what's said on their business card from stockbroker to financial planner, and now it's basically a marketing tactic because that's, you know, allowed in the profession these days? Ask some tough questions. What's your credentials? And I think CFP, Certified Financial Planner, is the mark that you're looking for there. For more information, go to CFP.net, and you'll find every piece of information you need to know about the Certified Financial Planner designation. And the other part that we really got on that kind of segued us into the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Murfreesboro is, you know, just because something is on the news and affects the entire nation doesn't mean we need to leave out issues like unethical sales practices that we experience every day here in our own community. We need to take a stand on that. Take a stand locally and say, look, big banks, big insurance companies, big investment companies that operate here in our town, we don't want your unethical sales practices. We want full disclosure. We want to know what standard of care you operate by. And if you send somebody out to my house to talk about financial planning, that they actually have some financial planning experience and not have investment-only experience or insurance-only experience. No, have some guideline rules to follow. So as we close out today, I want to say a couple of different things. If you need to contact me for any reason, phone or email, perfectly okay with that. I welcome it. Comments as well. You can reach me at 878-2134. Or you can email the show, financialdoctorsshow@gmail.com, or visit my company's website, which is Fortitude Fee Only Financial Planning, and you can access that at fortitudewealthmanagement.com. Remember, we are a fee-only financial planning firm. We do not sell products. We do not accept commissions. We only charge for our unbiased, objective advice, and that's what you'll get here going forward on the Financial Doctors Radio Show. I would like to say, I was going to tell thanks to our guests today, but since the phone lines were out, we weren't able to have any callers. If that were part of it, we didn't get to have our guests come on the show by way of telephone line. They are down, and we sincerely apologize for that. But next week, we'll have those guys on here that were going to be on here this week and cover those topics. And I would like to say thanks to my producer, Zach Troutman, for sitting in here with me today. And also, I'm going to make someone very excited. My little four-year-old wanted his name mentioned on the radio, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. Give a shout-out to my little man, Christian Qualls. But until next week, I'm Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner, fee-only financial planner, and we'll see you next Saturday or Sunday. Thanks for tuning in to the Financial Doctors Radio Show. Money, 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 money